You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Warriors Off Court, the San Francisco Chronicles NBA podcast. I'm your host, Warriors beat writer Connor Letourneau, and I'm joined today by my boss, assistant sports editor, and former Warriors beat writer, Janie Hu. So we're here at the San Francisco Chronicle newsroom a few hours before I got to head out on the road for what is going to be the longest road trip of the season. Quite the gauntlet, 6 cities. 10 days everywhere from LA, Orlando, Miami, New Orleans, Charlotte, Detroit. This is probably the most travel heavy stretch of the season, because this is going to come after we just got back from a 4-city, 7-night gauntlet. And then they had 3 games in 5 nights at home. And so now we're heading on this even crazier stretch. So I'm a little tired, but thank you for giving me last night off.
Very welcome.
I needed it. But I'm also excited because there's a lot of interesting things percolating with this team right now.
You know, I actually counted. I took a calendar out today, and the Warriors had 3 home games. They're in a stretch with 3 home games in 27 days. So that just speaks to the NBA travel schedule, which is actually, they made a point to make it lighter this year. So the team does not have any 4-game and 5-night stretches. They're trying to limit the back-to-backs. Of course, you guys just had one, which was a home back-and-back. The Warriors played, I believe they hosted Chicago and New Orleans. Mm-hmm. Have you talked to the players at all about the travel schedule and their thoughts on it?
Yeah, no, they're really happy with it. And Steve is extremely happy about it. Steve Kerr, if you remember last season, a big reason why Adam Silver and the NBA felt compelled to adjust the travel schedule and the NBA schedule to make it less demanding on players is because of what happened with the nationally televised game in San Antonio last March, where Steve rested really all of his core guys, and that, you know, they got killed by an also depleted Spurs team, and in front of a national TV audience, a primetime game on TNT. So the part of the reason that they adjusted that was because of that. And so there, from my perspective, it's been interesting because just this last road trip, we had 2 straight days off back to back on the road, which almost never happens. You probably remember when you were traveling with the Warriors back in the day. That's very rare.
No, we had the 5 road games in 7 nights scenario, yeah, where it's literally 1 city, another city, a day off maybe, and then, yeah, 2 more games, a day off. So it's that's something that they did cut out with this new travel schedule. No more 5 games in 7-day stretches, I believe.
Right, right. And so,
or maybe it's 4 and 5.
Yeah, no more 4 and 5s, which is nice not only for the players but for myself. So I'm not complaining either. But the interesting thing about that is that even though it's a lot less demanding on the players, Steve is still making a point to find rest for guys. You know, he makes sense. He's found rest periodically throughout the season for his older guys, David West, Sean Livingston, Andre Iguodala. But he rested Draymond Green the other night, which was a little surprising. That was the first time he had done that this season. Draymond wasn't super stoked about it, as you can imagine. But Steve said that looking at the finals last June, watching the film of that, it looked like Draymond was worn down. And if you remember the finals, he didn't play that great. He shot like 31% from the field. He was solid defensively, but he had a bunch of fouls, and he just wasn't necessarily as mentally locked in as he normally is. And this team is geared toward the long run. They're focused on another championship run, so they want to avoid burnout. And so he sat the other night for the Chicago game, and a couple other guys have been sitting for injuries, but they're injuries that aren't necessarily major. And Steve has said that if this was the playoffs, they would be playing. Guys like, you know, just last night, Durant and Curry both sat out, and they lost to what's considered to be a pretty bad Kings team, a Kings team that only had 5 wins. What do you think of that? What do you think of their decision to sit those guys in a game like that?
I'm going to go back to Ron Krychek's lead from today's his game story, which is so they can play without one MVP, but apparently not 2 MVPs.
Right.
I think it's a super conservative approach, which is a good thing. The NBA season, as we all know, it's a marathon, not a sprint. It's super cliched to say that, but the regular season is so long. The playoffs are so incredibly long. We have 2 full months afterwards of games that actually matter. I think it's a page out of Greg Popovich's book. I'm going to give my stars some rest. If we lose a game, oh well. And honestly, it's hard to argue with that. You want your guys fresh for the playoffs, for sure. And for the Warriors, you know, look at the Pacific standings right now. They're already, I don't know how many games it is, right, 5-6 games ahead. It's hard to make the argument. You know, we talk about this a lot. Does the regular season matter? Yeah. I don't know. What would you say?
I mean, what we're talking about here is worst case scenario. Like, let's be realistic here. Worst case scenario is maybe they don't get the number one overall seed. Maybe they're not the number one seed in the West and they don't have home court advantage throughout the playoffs. That would be a disappointment given the fact that this is the most loaded roster in recent NBA history, maybe ever. But keep that in perspective. I mean, what does that mean? You know, they could still very well make the finals. They could very well, they're still going to be favored to win the championship, even if they're not the number one seed. So I think the Warriors, they want the number one overall seed. That's the goal, but they're not going to be freaking out if that doesn't happen. And the interesting thing about this team is they keep perspective about regular season losses, unlike any team I've been around. You know, after the OKC game the other night in OKC, that was a nationally televised game. Durant homecoming, obviously a really raucous atmosphere. They got blown out, played one of their worst games of the year, if not their worst. And, you know, they were in the locker room joking around, smiling. And I don't think that fans should be upset hearing that, because it's not that they don't take it seriously. It's that they have the perspective of what that means. I mean, it's a regular season loss. They were playing really well before that. You know, they went on a nice 7-game winning streak not long before that. So it's not the end of the world.
You want to know what's funny that I think about this conversation? It's not whether or not Coach Steve Kerr is sitting Steph Curry or being more careful with Kevin Durant when we're talking about who's playing, who's not. It's like the question out of last night's game, like, why didn't he play Jordan Bell more? It's really It's these other guys that are not the superstars, and nobody seems to be a lightning rod, especially for the Warriors fan base right now, as Jordan Bell. Fans are in love with him. Everybody wants to know, why didn't Kerr play him more last night? What's your thought on this whole Jordan Bell?
Well, Jordan Bell's had a really interesting rookie season because, you know, he came in, people were high on him the moment they paid $3.5 million to the Bulls to get him, because that is a guy who fits what they do really well. He wasn't necessarily supposed to be a second-round pick, and then they nab him, don't even have to give up a player to get him. It was kind of an example of the genius that a lot of people think Bob Myers is. And then he comes in, has a really nice summer league, has a really nice preseason, and then makes an immediate impact in the regular season. Cracked the rotation right away, had a couple really big, really nice games. The thing about Jordan Bell is it's almost become funny, because every time he steps on the court, he has a SportsCenter worthy highlight within the first 30 seconds. I mean, it happened again last night with that big dunk. It happened the other night against Chicago with the alley-oop lob from Zaza Pachulia. Every single time almost. And fans love that. They love the energy he brings, the block shots. I mean, he started in place of Draymond for the Chicago game, which was obviously a nice little storyline because Chicago is a rebuilding team who could use a guy like Jordan Bell right now, and gave him away for nothing but money. And he had 6 blocks in his first ever start, which he is the first rookie to ever do that in his first start since DeAndre Jordan in 2009. This is a guy who's a rotation caliber player who's in and out of the rotation just because of reasons beyond his own control, because this team is so incredibly deep. I mean, he's been inactive, I want to say, at least a half dozen times this season, and he wouldn't be inactive on any other team in this league.
You know, he reminds me of like a mini Draymond Green, and how Warriors say, you know, you got to let Draymond be Draymond. You kind of let Jordan Bell be Jordan Bell. His kind of really off the wild antics, sometimes the throwing the lob to himself and cash considerations. Yeah. What do his teammates think of that?
They love it. And Draymond loves it more than anyone. I thought the thing about it is, you can say, oh, he shouldn't be doing that, he's a rookie. But you also have to look at it from the perspective of, he has an incredible amount of confidence, and that's what it takes to really be successful in this league. You need to believe in yourself. You need to feel that you belong. And his first, you know, that Dallas game where he threw the lob to himself, that was like his third game ever in the league. And this is a second round pick.
Right.
That does not a lot of rookie second round picks would do that in their third NBA game. And I talked to, you know, people close to him, and his high school coach, who's kind of like a father figure to him, who told me that's Jordan. He does that. He did that in high school multiple times. You go on YouTube right now, you can find a high school game, a big time high school game that he played his senior year, where they were up by like 2 points in the final minutes, and he did that, and he broke a backboard. I mean,
that's amazing.
That's how he rolls. And I thought it was encouraging in a way that he embraced the moment of starting that game against the team that traded him. And, you know, he was in when he got his name called pregame, he did the money gesture with his hands.
Right.
And when he was asked after the game, why'd you do that? He was like, I was seeing how cash considerations was doing on the bench.
I love that. How do you not love that?
Yeah. And because the thing that you have to keep in mind, too, is this is a guy who was inactive for the previous 5 games. Right. He went from being inactive for the previous 5 games to the starting lineup and wasn't scared at all, and had a great game. He posted a Draymond Green-esque stat line, played very much like Draymond Green, and talked like Draymond Green. and I wrote a whole story 2 days ago about that, and about their mentorship and their relationship. It's been cool to follow that, because Draymond's a guy who Jordan has actually studied in a very detailed way for the past 3+ years. And now he has the chance to learn from him. And a big reason why he was drafted is because the Warriors see a lot of similarities between them. And I think, honestly, that the sky's the limit for Jordan. I think he can be an elite player.
Do you think Kerr's going to start giving him a little bit of a longer leash, or has he earned more playing time? What do you see for him in the rotation?
Yeah, he said last night that he's going to need to find more minutes for Jordan. And, you know, he said that was the first time he's really admitted that, because up until this point, he said, you know, Jordan's getting the rookie treatment. You know, he's playing well, but you have to pay your dues. And Kevon Looney had been playing well, but I think what Jordan's done the past couple games has really forced Steve's hand to the point where he has to play him, because he's played at that level. Kevon Looney's had some nice moments, had some good games, and I know he's wanted to play Kevon, but I don't think you can deny Jordan at this point.
Right.
So I expect him to get regular minutes. Will it be big-time minutes when KD and Steph come back? No, but I expect him to play every game, which is an improvement over what was the case much of the season.
Right. So we're recording this podcast on a Tuesday morning after the Warriors just lost to Sacramento. Let's take stock of where we are injury wise. Kevin Durant, obviously they started the season and were pretty healthy. Now we have these little nagging injuries. Kevin Durant probably is the biggest concern.
Yeah. Cause the whole Durant injury was interesting, because he actually got that injury in the Philadelphia game last week, early in that Philadelphia game, and he still had like 27 points. There was no signs of a ankle injury in that game, but then came out the next day that he had some soreness, missed the Brooklyn game, and then he practiced the next couple days with no problems, played in the OKC game, didn't play great in the OKC game, but there wasn't necessarily signs that he was hurt. And then apparently he had soreness the next day after the OKC game, and Steve Kerr admitted that we probably shouldn't have played him. I mean, obviously Durant felt some extra motivation to play that game against his former team and in front of that crowd. But, you know, I don't want to say it's concerning, but it's surprising. I mean, I never expected it to last this long. He does have, you know, he's going to have a day to get ready, now for this Lakers game tomorrow. And, you know, it's a pretty travel heavy stretch. So I would expect him to play tomorrow. If he doesn't, I definitely expect him to play at some point at the front end of this road trip. But no, it's been surprising, but like I said, not anything to freak out about.
Right. You mentioned the Lakers are heading down to Los Angeles to play them Wednesday. I wanted to know, we see the headlines and everything else, I don't know if you would call it noise or white noise around the Lakers and Lonzo Ball. What's been his rep around the league? Are the players talking about him, you know, or his dad?
Yeah. I haven't, you know, I'm sure they'll get a lot of those questions tomorrow at shoot around. I haven't talked to them specifically about Lonzo. I've overheard them mention him in the locker room, just, you know, when the TV's on, because it seems like they're on the TV all the time. If you remember, in Brooklyn, that the day that Trump tweeted about LeVar Ball, Steve was asked about that situation and basically said he's tired of hearing from both Trump and LeVar.
Right.
And he actually asked media to stop covering LeVar. He's like, you probably can't stop covering the president of the United States, but you can probably stop covering LeVar Ball, which is fair. I kind of agree with him, to be honest.
Well, and, you know, we were talking earlier about Jordan Bell and, you know, all the pressures that rookies face. This is Lonzo's a rookie trying to make a name for himself, trying to figure out the rhythm and the pace of a game. It can't be easy when you have these other distractions going on around you. It seems to me like, you know, I know LeVar Ball has basically groomed the basketball careers of his sons, but it's at what point, you know, and right. I see a lot of stories coming out of LA. At what point does that cross the line?
I think that his dad has hurt him in a lot of ways. I think that it's hard to say that they're directly related, but it definitely doesn't help when because what it does is his dad is hyping him up. You know, he's a bigger deal because his dad talks so much and his dad's in the headlines so much. So implicitly, maybe people don't think about this directly, but they have higher expectations for Lonzo because they hear his name so much. Anytime you hear someone's name so much, you're going to think, okay, they got to back this up. And I think people have gotten the expectations have gotten a little out of hand. I never thought Lonzo Ball was going to come in and be the way LeBron was his rookie year, or, you know, be this dominant impact player as a rookie. I thought best case scenario, maybe in 4 to 5 years, he'll be a Jason Kidd type,
right?
Which is a phenomenal career to have, but he's not going to wow you, especially offensively. He's literally dead last in the NBA in shooting percentage right now. He's shooting 31% from the field. That is horrible by any measure. Yet the Lakers have to play him because he's the future of their franchise. He's the number two pick.
Right.
The funny thing is Jordan Clarkson's playing a lot better than him, and he's a better point guard. If they're trying to win games right now, Clarkson should probably be starting. I understand why he's not, though.
Right. Well, we've got some good stuff to look forward to tomorrow night. I want to take stock because we're about at the quarter way through the season right now. And obviously the expectations were already sky high for the Warriors this season. People seem to have just penciled them into another NBA Finals. But what are your impressions so far a quarter of the way through?
If you had to give it a letter grade or that kind of thing, I'd probably give them a B-. You know, you can see the potential. You can see how absolutely dominant this team can be. I honestly think when this team is firing on all cylinders, they're even better than last season's team because I think the bench is better. And they also have another year playing together and they're comfortable with each other. That third quarter in the Philadelphia game when they outscored a good 76ers team in Philly 47-15, you know, when we're talking about greatest teams ever, go watch that quarter because that is what this team's ceiling is. But they're, as we have been saying since preseason, since training camp, their biggest obstacle is going to be complacency, inattention, you know, getting bored. And you've seen that be even a bigger problem than I expected it to be. You know, they're really lazy with their passing a lot of the times. They have a bunch of turnovers. Defensively, they'll just not bring it. Last night, they just were not on. They just weren't awake on that side of the ball. You know, they gave up 110 points to a pretty poor offensive, you know, Sacramento team at home. So they just don't put it all together. And I think part of it is that Draymond Green hasn't been as consistent as he normally is. And Draymond Green is a guy who's the emotional leader of this team. He sets the tone defensively, and he's even admitted publicly that he hasn't been there mentally the way he normally is. He spoke at Harvard last week, which was a really cool experience, but he spoke at Harvard and took ownership over the fact that at the time they had three losses and those three losses were because of him. And that might be an overstatement, but they kind of come and go as Draymond Green goes in a lot of instances. And I think he needs to be bring more energy, especially on the defensive end, night in and night out for them to, you know, win 60 plus games, which honestly they should.
I was talking to our Giants beat writer, Henry Schulman, about this. Obviously, the Giants did not have a good season this year, so putting on two different planes with them and the Warriors. But we were talking about, like, emotional leadership and specifically a guy like Hunter Pence, and who was known as the rock of, you know, the heartbeat, in a way, of the team, rah-rah guy. And, you know, what he was doing in the middle of this season to kind of cheer, you know, not cheer the Giants up, but kind of get them going. And what Henry said that I thought was really interesting is that it's hard for guys sometimes when they're not playing well to assume that role too. So I'm just wondering if there's just sort of like cause and effect relationship there. Do you need to start playing well to be able to kind of be that guy, that central guy?
Well, I think with Draymond, a lot of him playing well is just based in energy. I mean, when he's not playing well, it's because he isn't there mentally. His motor isn't up the way it should be, because he's not a guy that you're necessarily going to ask to score 20 points. You know, a lot of his stuff isn't about the ball going in the net. It's about stuff that you can bring night in and night out. You know, it's not a matter of luck. You know, it's not a matter of the ball falling the right way. So
they're like the hustle plays, the energy.
Yeah, the hustle plays. Yeah. And if he's doing all that and not making his shots, they're going to be fine. You know, it's just a matter of him, you know, being right on the defensive end and being that emotional leader, which he's been in and out, you know, in terms of that this season.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the Philly game and their brilliant play there at the end. It's what seems like this season has lacked so far is just that kind of signature, really like rousing performance. Klay's 60-point game, for instance, and it looked like Steph was on his way with that 26-point second quarter against Chicago, and then basically didn't play the second half, which is fine. But it's just there hasn't been, to me, that signature moment.
No, there hasn't. You know, there were a decent amount last year. You mentioned the 60-point game, Steph setting the 3-pointers record, Draymond having the first triple double without points. There hasn't been anything quite like that. You know, I think you also need to keep in mind that stuff was pretty rare. They have done.
This is what's wrong with the Warriors. They spoil their fan base.
No, they do. But you know, 47-point third quarter is pretty impressive. You know, they've had some pretty spectacular games, but I think what you're getting at a little bit is that they haven't had really a complete performance, at least against a good team. You know, they've had, you know, they dominated Dallas at Dallas, but like Dallas is probably, you know, one of the worst teams in the league. They've had some good games against bad teams, but they're not putting it together for four quarters consistently. It almost gets boring. as someone who's at every game, because you see them, you know, they might get off to a decent start. They'll let the team back by halftime, and then normally they'll go on a big third quarter run and win convincingly. And it's like, if you're Steve Kerr, you get tired of seeing that, because it shouldn't take that. It shouldn't take halftime to make those adjustments. You should be able to do that the entire game. And once they get, you know, to the postseason, they're playing these good teams. They can't rely on that anymore. And obviously everything changes in the postseason. They're naturally going to be more focused because it's the postseason. But those habits need to be built. You know, you need to practice that stuff.
Right. It is. It's I think you see it as a faucet that you can turn on and off. Right. But I guess the good news is we are really only a quarter of the way through. Yeah. So they have plenty of time to get those habits in order.
No, I think they're in good shape. Anyone that's worried about them right now, you know, they're going to be fine. Even like we said earlier, even if they're not the number one overall seed, they're still gonna be the favorite to win it all. I would still be surprised if they don't win it all. They're just the most talented team in the league. So I really appreciate you, Janie, for taking the time with me. This is going to be a regular podcast that we're going to be doing throughout the season. So and pretty soon we're going to try to get this up on iTunes. So be listening. Once it gets on iTunes, definitely follow us. And we look forward to doing this going forward.
Sounds good.